Welcome there, lovers of true crime, history, and mystery. I am Daniel, and across from me is Josh.
What's going on, people?
So this is actually your first true recording with the new board, and you listeners, y'all are going to have a good time with this, because it sounds a million times better than what it used to.
But we didn't publish anything with the old boards. They're not going to know.
You know what? But I know.
We know.
And they should appreciate
we
that.
We know.
And two things in the background. You're going to hear a little bit of raindrop. We're in Louisiana. It's wintertime.
There's a storm brewing.
That's right. And you're also going to hear my 13-year-old Bella running around. She's a dog, not a human.
With a lampshade on her head.
She does have a lampshade on her head. She has to wear the cone of shame for a long time, but... So you hear her bouncing around the halls, but that should be all you hear in the background. But, Josh, what are we talking about today?
All right, well, first off, together on Lost in Thought, that's right, it's lit. We are going to be stepping it up and creating our first episode with none other than Doc Holliday, the infamous gambler, gunslinger, and deputy.
And there's so much more about him than just that. It, the movies and everything else did not tell the full story.
No, just that's just a Hollywood version, you know?
Right.
We're here to break down some of that. Get through a little bit of the mystery and kind of piece it together for you right. guys.
And something else to remember is when you're hearing the story about him and all these stories, some of it may be elaborated and it may not be true historical, you know, facts. It's literally could be word of mouth like a telephone game where I say something, I whisper it in Josh's ear, Josh whispers it in somebody else's ear. Before it comes back to me, it's totally blown out of proportion. But the man was still completely insane though. I mean, it was
his absolutely. Entire life. You guys are going to understand when we get through with this how he was really remembered as one of those men who helped win the West because he was effing crazy.
Oh, he was absolutely crazy.
Absolutely. But you know, you're a dying man. I mean, it's going to make you live your days differently.
That's right. You know, Bella, that's how shit. She's like, I'm 13. I'm going to be crazy and make noise while they're trying to do a podcast.
I don't care what they're doing.
I don't know if that's what she would sound like if she could talk.
Nah, I think she sounds like a sassy old black lady.
She absolutely would.
Yes.
Yes.
Kick your ass. You keep talking shit, Josh.
That explains it 100%. All right, man. So where do we start off with this?
We start off in Georgia in the 1850s.
Georgia. Sweet, Georgia. Sweet Georgia. Hey, we can't sing much more of that. They're going to pop us. He asked me before. He's like, how much can I sing? I was like, you cannot sing songs. You can sing a few, you know,
how are you going to put a microphone in somebody and tell you can't sing? It don't work.
Oh, man. No, Georgia. What part of Georgia was it?
Valdosta, Georgia.
Ooh, I know where that's at.
In the 1850s. Late 1850s, I believe. Early 1850s, I believe.
Well, you know, what's cool, man, is it really wasn't anything there at the time. I mean, it was a new place.
No, we were still shaping the country, so to speak. You know?
That's right, especially wherever he goes. And that's what I've noticed was researching where he was born at, where he lived at, where he traveled to. This guy basically just traveled, literally following these new, brand new little towns and, you know, and territories and everything else. It's really cool. So, Valdosta, let's see.
We should back up a little bit, and we should start with Doc's father, Henry B. Holliday. He was actually a trained pharmacist who served in several wars, the Cherokee Indian War, the Mexican-American War, and he was also a major in the Confederate Army during the Civil War. Now, after serving in the Mexican War, he actually came home to Georgia with an orphaned Mexican boy that he adopted. His name was Francisco Hidalgo.
Wait. So he was fighting Mexicans?
Yeah. He fought them so much, he brought one home with him. Right. He was never going to get tired of fighting them, so he brought a little badass little kid home, and they fought the rest of the way.
Now, was this a, you know, oh, man, I love this kid, I want to rescue him, or do you think this was a, hey, look, I got a trophy?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Yeah. He could have really liked him. It's like, I got to have more of this kid, man.
But that was the last war he fought in, though, if I'm right. And the guy had fought a few wars. I mean, he was kind of a hardened guy himself.
Yeah, and after the wars, he came home and sort of became a leader within his town. He served two terms as the local mayor. He was secretary of the county of the county agriculture society, and also a member of the local Masonic lodge.
So oh, cool!
He was one of the higher ups.
Yeah, so even his dad was kind of a well-liked, well-known guy.
Yeah. Now, I guess we're really going to start this off now with. When Doc was 15, that's when his mother passed away of tuberculosis. Mm. And one of the prevailing theories is that he actually contracted TB at an early age while taking care of his mother.
Right.
So, guy basically lived his whole adult life with tuberculosis.
Yeah. That explains a lot later on in the story.
Yeah. Now, his family had a, they had a family member, Robert Holliday, who founded the Pennsylvania College of Dental Surgery. And they actually, that's what encouraged Doc's profession, is he had a family member that was teaching dentistry. Decided to go on and follow in the family footsteps, I guess you'd say.
Right. And it makes it a lot easier when you got, you know, somebody you know that's actually your instructor, too.
Oh, absolutely. Now, let's see. He enrolled in college in 1870, and he finished in spring of 1872. So dentistry was a two-year program back then.
Too bad it's not still. I'd be a dentist right now.
I mean, but they were really just like, you take these pliers and you're going to find the black tooth and you're just going to wiggle it out. And then give him some whiskey. Just get, take that shot, boy.
He finished the school in 1872.
Yes. Now, shortly after he graduated, he went to work in the dentist office of a Dr. Arthur C. Ford in Atlanta, Georgia.
Ah, Atlanta. A little backstory on Atlanta. At the time, the war had just ended, and they had to rebuild the city. So when he was there, there wasn't much left. Kind of like the rest of these stories, you know, towns in the story. Beginning in 1880s, the editor of the local newspaper promoted Atlanta, and a bunch of investors actually come running for the New South, quote unquote.
Now, check this out. You're in the Reconstruction period of the Civil War, okay? So you've got things going on real deep in the heart of the South.
Yeah.
You've got very political things going on in the northern part of the country. Out West is a totally different story.
Right.
And it makes me kind of wonder if a lot of these people were escaping the politics and the way of life that was being generated in the North and the South and headed out for unexplored territory, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, not long after he started the dental practice, Doc discovered that he had TB, tuberculosis.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah. Now, his adopted Mexican brother was also diagnosed with tuberculosis and died from it shortly thereafter.
Oh, man. So he was, so at 15, loses his mom. And then probably in his 20s, loses the guy that grew up as his brother.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably around that time, he was about 23 years old or something. He lost his adopted brother.
Man, that's tough.
Yeah, so, you know, he began to speak with other physicians and try and figure out what was going to happen. And the general consensus of the time to treat tuberculosis, which, well, there was no treatment, but to prolong your life was to move out to a drier, more arid climate.
Right.
Which, hence, started the trip out west for Doc. And what a trip it became, man. Yeah. What a trip.
Well, you know, one of the reasons he had to quit dentistry when he was still in Georgia was the fact that he would literally be over patients operating on them and then just start coughing in their face.
Yeah. Could you imagine that? Could you absolutely imagine that? And then think about it, at the time that tuberculosis was a death sentence.
Oh, yeah.
You
know?
And you got this motherfucker coughing on you while you're trying to get your teeth pulled. I might would have punched Doc, you know?
Well, you know, that's what happened. Like, literally, he'd start coughing, and people would just start walking out of his office. I mean, the guy had built a practice. He was, I mean, in his early 20s, the guy had it going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Starts smart, coughing in people's face.
Educated, you know? So, had a plan, and that plan was derailed.
That's right. So, you know what? He's heading out west.
Heading out. I can't do it. Yep. I was fixing to do something else.
You can't do it.
Nope. So, he headed to Dallas, Texas. That's where his trip out west starts.
Yeah, a little background on Dallas. There was nothing there when he got there. That is the background on Dallas. There was a small town along the Trinity River, and so, that's where, like, a trading post for the Indians and everything else.
So we're talking hot climate, red clay, tumbleweeds.
That's it. I mean, there's barely even stores or anything there. I mean, it's literally an area.
Damn, Dallas. Now, he went to work as a dentist again, and he was working underneath the doctor by the name of John A. Seeger. Now, just like you just mentioned, his coughing spells were pretty much making it impossible for him to work as a dentist, especially as a young partner to someone who already had an established practice.
Oh, I can imagine, you
know,
yeah.
He would told Doc in the nicest way possible, man, you got to go somewhere, you know?
You got to skedaddle, bro.
Now, moving out west, Doc, it's almost like he tried to reinvent himself because he was described by most people as a very unusual character. He was extremely smart, very intelligent, and he spoke like a smart, intelligent man with an extremely southern drawl. And you got to think, I mean, he's well-dressed, he's talking over a lot of people's heads, he's got this thick accent going on. You're either going to love or you're going to hate this man. You know what I mean?
All the ladies listening right now are going, oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's also said that he could speak Latin fluently.
I can speak pig Latin.
I don't even try it with me. He could play the piano, and he was a very dapper dresser.
Oh, dude. I want to be this guy.
Doc Holliday had the drip.
Oh, yeah.
Now, he picked up gambling because of his higher intelligence, you know, as he couldn't work as a dentist anymore, and he's thinking, I got to make my way out here. How am I going to earn money? Well, he wasn't going to work out in the fields. He wasn't going to be someone's store hand. You know, he turned to the cards. He became a gambler, and good gambler at that. Now, there's also a game that he played a lot called Faro. We probably should look up and sort of describe Faro a little bit to the audience at home because it's going to come up a few times within this story.
Yeah, because I've actually never heard of it. Let's see. I know I'm a Wikipedia-er like crazy. Faro Bank is a 17th century French gambling card game. Basically, it's a descendant of like a 15th century game, and it was popular in the 1800s here in North America.
Huh. Well, so it's just
a super, super old card game.
Ah, well, that's cool. Well, Doc began to hone his skills not only as a gambler, but being frail and sick, he had to learn how to defend himself even more.
Right.
So that's when he began to take himself out and learn to shoot, learn to handle his knife, really become that gunfighter.
Right.
You know? And I guess these gambling halls, these saloons, I mean, they were just rough places. I mean,
I could imagine, man.
I don't know if we could imagine. I think we can try, but I don't think I can quite recreate the must and the anger that's probably in the air of an Old West saloon.
Yeah.
Now, this first account of a gunfight that occurred with Doc Holliday happened in January of 1875, and it was with a saloon keeper named Austin who he had a disagreement with. Now, the disagreement turned violent, and several shots were fired, but neither man hit each other.
Dude, I'm picturing the parakeet, like, chilling, like, on the wall, and they're just shooting randomly. Poor parakeet gets blown away. The barrels of all the booze starts getting shot. Booze is running everywhere. But the guys are just sitting there looking around at themselves, you know, what happened?
Now, somebody's hat had to have got shot during all that.
Oh, dude, it was the guy in the corner, like, holding the cards, and it literally, he, like, looks at his hat really awkwardly.
See, I was going to say it was the fake piano player, and, like, he went to, you know, check his hat, and the keys kept playing the whole time, you know, didn't skip a beat.
Yes.
Now, with nobody hitting anybody, the locals freaking thought this was hilarious.
Well, I would, too.
You know, we just described it. It was fucking hilarious. But that's how it went down in history. Catfish and I just described it, 100%.
But you know what's not funny?
What?
The parakeet on the wall.
Yeah, poor Charlie. That's what I'm going to call him.
Charlie the parakeet.
Charlie the parakeet. He was like, "Right, you suck." Now, just a few days later after the funny fight, Doc got into it again with a much more prominent local citizen and shot the man twice, killing him.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
So this is where it gets really bad for him.
Doc had to flee Dallas with a posse on his heels, and he headed to the lawless town of Jacksonboro, Texas, and was near an army post. He got a job dealing faro, and this time he had a gun on his shoulder. He had a gun on his hip, and he also carried a knife with him.
Oh, he was ready at this point.
Yeah. Now, he started to become an expert at this point, and he was involved in 3 more gunfights in a very short amount of time. But no charges were ever pressed against him because this place was so freaking lawless. Like, you did your own stuff out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and there was not even a legitimate, like, town. I mean, there was nothing there.
Yeah. Now, then in the summer of 1876, he got into another disagreement that led to violence, and he killed a soldier from Fort Richardson, which brought in the government.
See, we got a body count now.
Yeah, he's starting to stack it up. Now, a reward was offered for his capture, and he was fairly aggressively pursued by the Army, the Texas Rangers, the U.S. Marshals, along with local lawmen and other just regular Joes who were trying to collect a bounty.
He maxed his stars out on Grand Theft Auto is what I'm hearing.
Straight five. Now, aware of the fact that he was going to be hung if he got captured, he fled for the Apache country in Kansas territory, which is now Colorado. He made stops along the way in Leadville, in Pueblo, Georgetown, and in Central City. Now, during this, he left three more bodies in his wake, killed three more people. Finally, he settled down in Denver, and he took on the assumed name of Tom Mackey and began to deal faro at a place called Babbitt's House. Now, he kept a low profile for a while until he got into an argument with a man named Bud Ryan, who was well known for being a tough gambler. They got into a fight, and Doc nearly cut this man's head off with his knife.
Jeez.
Yeah. Now, though Ryan survived, his face and his neck were horribly mutilated, according to accounts and firsthand witnesses. Now, the public didn't really like Doc at this time, and he had to hightail it out again. He went to Wyoming, he went to New Mexico, and finally he backtracked to Texas to a place called Fort Griffin. And Fort Griffin is where he met not only Big Nose Kate, but Wyatt Earp as well.
Oh, okay.
Now, he was dealing cards in a place called John Shancy's Saloon. And that's where Doc met Big Nose Kate, whose name was actually Mary Catherine Elder Haroney. Now,
That's one hell of a name.
Yeah. Now, while it's said that she was attractive, she did have a very prominent nose. Now, there's a few theories as to why she was called Big Nose Kate. One, the most obvious, was that she had kind of a big nose. But then also, according to Wyatt Earp himself, she was actually just kind of a nosy woman and wasn't afraid to put her two cents into other people's business.
I believe the one that actually gave her the nickname.
Yes, I believe that is true. What up, Bella? How you doing? She says,
you know what?
Hey.
You know what? I'm going to start just keeping it rolling. If she barks in the background, she barks in the background.
Yeah. Now, Big Nose Kate, she was tough, she was stubborn, and she was hot-tempered. Enough that it matched Doc's, you know, hot-temperedness. So, I guess they were a pair, to say the least.
They were kindred spirits.
Yeah. And it's even to be said that she worked as a prostitute because she liked it, and she belonged to no man.
Well, prostitution back then was not what you think. I mean, if you look at
I thought it was selling pussy.
That is exactly what it is. But no, prostitution was, you got to think, these ladies knew everything going on in town. So not only did they bring money in, spend money in the town, they knew when they were these men, they found out what they were doing in business, what politics were going on. They didn't get messed with. I mean, they were held kind of a high regard. Yeah. That's what, when you see it and it's like,
hey, Bella.
No, when you see it, and it's like the prostitutes getting beat up all the time and all this stuff, that's kind of horse crap.
Patootie.
So he's with Big Nose Kate now.
Yeah. Now, enter Wyatt Earp. So, right. Earp was traveling from Dodge City back into Fort Griffin, and he was on the trail of a train robber by the name of Dave Rudabaugh. I believe that's going to be familiar for a few of you guys. Now, having been issued an acting commission as a U.S. deputy marshal, Earp was able to pursue the outlaw through multiple states, and he followed Rudabaugh for an amazing 400 miles. Can you imagine tracking a man for 400 miles pre-technology?
How do you even do that? That's what I've always wondered. Like, how did they even manage to put... Did they put their ear to the ground, and they're like, oh, I can hear him in the distance?
Drunks can't keep their mouth shut. Saloon to saloon for 400 miles, baby.
Oh, man, dude.
So Wyatt went to the largest saloon in town, which was Shancy's, and was asking about Rudabaugh. Now, the owner, John Shancy, said that Rudabaugh had been in earlier during the week, and he didn't know where he went. But he told Wyatt he should check with Doc Holliday because they were playing cards together. Now, Wyatt was skeptical about talking to Holiday. Because, you know, I mean, it was known that Doc freaking hated lawmen. I mean, he was a gunslinger. He was an outlaw. Let's be honest. He was a murderer at this point.
Right.
You know? But Wyatt was so hell-bent on getting Dave Rudabaugh that he was going to take a chance. And he went to go speak with Doc. He was extremely surprised at Doc's willingness to talk to Wyatt, especially about Dave. Hmm. Now, Doc told Wyatt that he thought that Rudabaugh had actually backtracked into Kansas. And Wyatt wired this information to none other than the sheriff of Dodge City, Bat Masterson. So here we've got Doc Holliday, Wyatt Earp, and Bat Masterson. Now, Masterson was able to apprehend Rudabaugh through this bit of information. So a friendship started to form that day or that particular instance between Wyatt and Doc.
Right.
So now we need to get back with Doc's story, because you're going to see where the Earps tend to take over a little bit of Doc's story and his history, because he was so intertwined with what made the Earps famous. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right. He was a key component to the entire thing.
Yeah. Now, back in 1877, that's where we're at, Doc was dealing cards again, and he ran into a man by the name of Ed Bailey, who was known as being a bully and who would just get his way, you know, without question. You know, he would sit there, and if he wanted something, he would take it. You weren't going to tell him any different. That was this kind of man.
Yeah, but that does not fly with Doc Holliday that I'm learning about.
Absolutely. So Bailey, who honestly didn't think much of Doc, kept picking up the cards that were discarded while you were playing. And if anybody knows about playing cards, you've got those loose cards on the table. You can kind of look through them, see what's there, and it can kind of lead you to know what's in your hand, you know, other people's hands.
Well, there's only so many cards in a deck.
Exactly what cards are in play. So this kept pissing Doc off, and that is strictly prohibited by the rules of Wild West Poker. You do not look at those cards, and it can make you forfeit the pot. So Holiday kept warning Bailey, not once, not twice, but three different times. And on the third time that he kept looking at these discarded cards, Doc just reached up and raked the pile in, because by the rules, he had won. Now, Bailey jumped up and immediately went to whip out a pistol. But before he could even pull the trigger and aim it steady, Doc pulled out his knife and slashed the man completely across the stomach, one side to the other. Blood spilled out across the table, and Ed Bailey face down on it.
Instant.
Yeah.
Done.
But he knew that his actions were in self-defense, because Bailey drew first. Bailey had a reputation. Right. He was publicly warning Bailey. So he didn't run. He just stayed there. But he was still arrested, and they actually confined him in a local hotel room because they didn't have a jail in the town. That's how wild it was. They didn't give a fuck about a jail. I'm going to lock you in this room. Okay, so whether or not it was in self-defense, a local posse formed to go and hang Doc. So Big Nose Kate had to spring into action. Now, the events are a little skewed in embellishment versus the facts. Right. But there are some things that we do know. That a large fire was started on the other end of the town to create a distraction.
No way.
Absolutely.
So she lit a fire as a distraction.
Yes. We do know that she set fire to a shed.
My wife would never do that.
No, Amy would have left me there.
100%. You dumbass!
Now, when the fire was going on and the distraction was created, it's been reported that Big Nose Kate actually busted into Doc's hotel room, two guns, one in each hand, holding up the deputies and getting Doc released.
I'm kind of in love right now.
Here's the thing, though. Later on in Kate's life, she was interviewed by a newspaper in San Francisco, and she was like, come on, could you imagine me busting in there, pistols blazing, doing exactly this? She also could have been playing it off that she didn't. But one thing is for certain. A fire was started, Doc escaped from his room, and they took off on horseback in the middle of the night.
Well, she did admit to the fire, though, if I'm right.
Absolutely. She did admit to the fire.
Which is, on its own, a badass thing to do.
Yes. So, that's when they headed to none other than Dodge City.
Ooh, Dodge City.
So, I'm going to turn it over to my buddy Danny over here, And he's going to give you a little background on Dodge City. We're going to try and paint a picture for you. Really, really help your mind get to where we are.
Yeah, Dodge City actually, its origins kind of bounce back to like 1871. It was just a rancher, and he built a house and called it, Fort Dodge is what he called the house in the little area. But there, at the time when he was there, Dodge wasn't that big. It was still a fresh town. It had become kind of almost like a boom town overnight, and it was cattle rustlers. It was, you know, the bad of the bad. It was the worst human beings at the time would go to Dodge and would go to this area. Because it was, you got to think of where it's at also. It's right there in the middle of the entire country. So if you're up north, you're down south. Everybody just kind of convened into that one area. So Dodge was this lawless, just raw town.
Man. So they rolled in the middle of the night and freaking stolen horses. They registered to a place called Deacon Cox's boarding home. They registered under the name of Dr. and Mrs. J.H. Holiday. So they weren't necessarily, you know, trying to hide out, you know. I mean, he still kept his name and whatnot. Now, Doc was so appreciative of what Kate did for him that they tried to make a straight go of it. Doc became a dentist for a short while. Kate stopped hoeing herself out, but this didn't really last too long.
That's not the no.
She was back in the hall selling what she sold. He was in the back room doing what he did.
Yeah, you can take them off the streets, but you can never take the streets out of them.
Oh no! Now he frequented a place called the Alhambra and the Long Branch Saloon. Now this is really where Doc and Wyatt really. They started hanging out on a daily basis. They really got to become good friends in here. Now, one night, while Doc was dealing faro, that's the game we were talking about, in the Long Branch Saloon, a number of the infamous Texas Cowboys arrived after herding cattle.
Uh-oh.
Now, they'd been on the trail for weeks, they were rowdy, and they were ready to tear stuff up. Leading the cowboy mob was a man named Ed Morrison, who Wyatt had actually humiliated back in Wichita, Kansas, and another man named Toby Driscoll. Now, the cowboys rushed through the town, shooting the place up, riding their horses. I mean, what you see in those old Texas Western
this
movies.
This is where those movies come from.
Absolutely. This was the inspiration, because these fools actually did ride into towns, shooting it up, hooping, hollering, you know. That was their version of a good time. So people went to go get Wyatt. I mean, he was the sheriff.
Yeah, they're like, hey, man, hey, something's going on. Get over here.
So he rushes over to the Long Branch Saloon, busts through the door, and came face to face to face to face with several of the cowboys who had guns drawn on them. Wyatt kind of realized he made a mistake at this point.
Oh, he's just outnumbered.
Yeah. Now, Morrison raised his weapon, and it's being quoted, he said, "Pray and jerk your gun. Your time has come, Earp." Now, suddenly, a voice sounded behind Morris, and it's quoted saying, "No, friend, you draw, or throw your hands up." It was none other than Doc. He had a revolver to Morrison's temple.
Oh, man. Did Doc know Wyatt at this time?
Yeah. Remember, they had already started to become good friends,
you know? Yeah, but I mean, this takes it to another level.
Yeah. And then he goes on to say, "Any of you bastards pulls a gun and your leader here loses what's left of his brains." The cowboys dropped their weapons. Wyatt began to pistol whip Morrison over the head with his long barrel coat. And then they relieved Driscoll and Morrison of their firearms and took them to the jail in Dodge City.
So not only do you totally just kick their ass, but now you're dragging them to jail.
Yeah. Wyatt never forgot what Doc did for him that day. He saved his life that night.
I mean, our friendship's based off of chicken nuggets.
I love nuggets.
Yes, but I mean, this is purely you saved my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Josh, I think you owe me one.
Oh, nuggets.
Yeah, I'm waiting on you to save my life now.
Wyatt said, "The only way anyone could have appreciated the feeling I had for Doc after the Driscoll Morrison business would have been to have stood in my boots at the time Doc came through the Long Branch doorway." Man, I bet you freaking Wyatt was scared.
Oh, I guarantee it.
Now, I think we need to kind of talk about Doc and Kate a little bit. Now, they had a volatile relationship, and they fought frequently. Now, one time they got into a really, really bad fight. and Doc headed out and somehow ended up in Trinidad, Colorado.
Oh, Trinidad was actually first explored by Spanish and Mexican traders. So it was another trading town. But approximately, it was somewhere along the Santa Fe Trail. It was found in 1862, soon after the coal was discovered, and it became a boom town. It was a coal town, is actually what it turned in. Yeah, I think back then, that's how you heated your homes. It's how you heated everything was coal. So it was
coal was
it was
king.
An oil boom. It was a then oil boom.
Yeah.
I mean, you find coal, the whole town lit up.
Yeah.
I mean, you got people coming in just for work. You got investors coming in. Local businesses are booming. But it was a coal town.
Yeah. So Doc makes it into Trinidad, and not long after he gets there, he gets into a fight with a young gambler who was known as Kid Colton. Now, the kid was trying to make a reputation with Doc and called him out. But I guess he didn't realize how good of a gunslinger Doc was. And once again, he ended up dead with two bullets. So there's multiple times when Doc has killed men with two well-placed shots.
Well, he probably wanted to make probably hit fired off two rounds, and the second was just to make sure.
Yeah, so Doc had to get the hell out of there, man. Where he ended up? Las Vegas, New Mexico.
Viva!
No, you can't do that either.
Oh, my gosh, no. Wait, wrong Vegas also.
We love Las Vegas. I didn't do Viva. Yeah. But yeah, Las Vegas, New Mexico, where in the late summer of 1879, he tried to become a dentist one more time. And it only lasted a few weeks where Doc then becomes a saloon owner.
Whoa.
Yeah, party at the Holiday Inn, baby. Yeah. Is that where it came from?
That's probably where... Oh, wait.
Now on to August of 1879, where Doc once again got into an argument with a local gunman named Mike Gordon. The two took the argument to the street, where Doc actually politely invited Gordon to start shooting whenever he felt like it. So Gordon started shooting, but somehow he wound up dead with three shots in his belly. So I guess if you don't hit Doc when he tells you, he's going to give you an extra one. You know, one more for good measure.
Yeah.
So guess what? Here comes another lynch mob after the holiday.
Jesus.
Yep. So where did he go? Back to Dodge City. Now, when he got there, he actually found out that Wyatt had moved on to a new place called Tombstone, Arizona, because there was a silver strike going on. Now, Big Nose Kate was also nowhere to be seen in Dodge City because she was heading out for Tombstone as well. Now, you want to talk about Tombstone a little bit, and let's paint a picture for the people.
All right, so Tombstone was it was found in 1877, but around 1880, it actually became a gold town. And there was somewhere around 40 to 85 million in silver and gold coming out of the hills at that time. So there is a lot of money getting tossed around, a lot of people moving into town. And I'm going to tell you now, these silver miners and gold miners, not the most civil human beings.
Oh, man. Speaking of money, while heading to Tombstone, Doc actually ran into Big Nose Kate in Prescott, Arizona. Now, during this, Doc went on an amazing winning streak at the gambling tables and won $40,000.
Whoa, wait. How much is this in, like, modern currency?
Dude, we got to look that up.
I'm looking this up. So, $40,000 in what year?
Let's look at 1880.
Let's see what I come up with. That would actually be... Oh, my gosh. That's a lot of money. We're looking at... somewhere around one point... It's over $1 million.
So over $1 million.
He was a millionaire.
Jesus. So Kate was happy to keep him company after that because homeboy was balling.
Oh, I mean, out of control.
Yeah. So in the summer of 1880, they finally reached Tombstone.
All right, Josh, let's split this up into two parts. But before then, you have a sponsor on board.
Yeah, that's right. Our very first sponsor, that is Jackie's Jailhouse Cakes, where their specialty is... undetectable nail files?
Where did you find this stuff at, dude?
Hey, man, let me just say, they're paying, I'm saying.
All right, guys, hold out. Wait for the second part to pop up. I'm Daniel.
I'm Josh. Guys, from Lost in Thought, till next time, stay lit.